Hello and welcome to the Bullshit Games Podcast. I am your host, Chase, and today we're going to be talking about pricing of games over the years and why is it $60 today. We will also be talking about on-disc DLC and how it affects the pricing of the game. And a big question to ask throughout all this is, are we paying more or less for games and consoles today?
I'm your other host, Quinn, and if you want to share your opinions or maybe thoughts you have on the podcast, please do on Twitter at BS Games Podcast. And I think that's about it. Let's just jump right in.
All right. So the first big topic I kind of want to talk about is pricing of games over the years. And the most iconic way I think to talk about it is to look at games such as NES cartridges. You know, the ones that came out in the 80s and early 90s, and then a little bit about the SNES cartridges as well, because that is when a lot of variation in pricing happened during those time periods. It also happened during the late 70s when the Atari VCS cartridge came out. So I want to kind of like go through those a little bit. One thing that's
interesting. Well, it's also important to note that this is pretty much the start of consoles, right? This is what the start of consoles and how they were priced and what they cost and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. So when things start up, obviously there's going to be large fluctuations, and why does it all of a sudden get set to finally $60? And that's how it's been for quite many years, actually.
You know, that's for the last decade at the very least. I think since the start of the third generation consoles, PS3 and Xbox 360, is really when the price was set at $60, and it hasn't changed since.
Yeah, and you would think like, oh, with each generation, perhaps it would go up by $10 or something like that, or some fixed amount.
Right.
You know, due to inflation, which is going to be a big part of what I'm going to be talking about. When we're looking at price differences between now and today, and then you'll understand why I'm asking these questions, because it's quite different, the prices from back then to today.
So how much did an NES cartridge cost, Chase?
Okay. So if you were to buy an NES cartridge, you would generally pay somewhere between $40 and $80. So today, using an inflation calculator, you can find out that that cost is between $78 and $156. So
that's insane.
We're paying a lot more now. We're paying a lot more back then than we are now, if we include inflation.
Right.
So the biggest question is, okay, it's $60 that we're paying for, you know, and that's the actual price today. And then we're paying $70, and then back then they're really paying $78 and $156. So there is a big question there. Not only why is there such a large fluctuation, but B, why so much? And obviously it's because back then technology wasn't at its finest. And so things make using technology cost a lot more. And that's just simple.
But you think it was it was in addition to all that, it's just like basically the NES, even though it might sound weird today, at that point in time in the 90s, it was the cutting edge thing.
The best way to make a comparison is just to look at the VR stuff.
Right. VR costs anywhere from $500 to $1,000 nowadays.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. Like the cheapest thing you can get that I could think of at the moment, and not including some of the, like, this is like a good version. I'm not talking about, you know, Google
cardboard.
Google Glass cardboard.
Yeah, it's literally your phone and you put it in a piece of cardboard.
Yeah. I'm thinking about PSVR. So that one's like $400, $500 just for that. I think it's cheapened since it came out. But
I think it's more around $200, but you need to have the PlayStation Eye and the PlayStation Move controllers to really get the full experience.
You can't,
but there are Windows mixed reality headsets that are around $250, $300 that pretty much give you a full, like, dumbed down version of full 6 degrees of freedom VR.
Right. And so to compare that, the NES console was $199 in 1985. That would be $434. So that you can see, like, it is comparable to, like, VR stuff today.
Or even just new consoles.
Yeah.
Like when a new console comes out, they're roughly $400, $500. So it's pretty comparable.
All right, here's then I'll give you one. Okay, I'll give you one then that definitely would not be comparable to any console today. Okay. It would be the Atari 2600 that came out in 1977. That was also $199.99 when it came out, but mm-hmm. today it is $771.83.
Wow.
So to compare that, the PlayStation 3 console, when if you adjust it for inflation today, it would be I believe it was $742. The PlayStation 3 came out at $599.99 back in 2000. What was it? About six?
Yeah, I think it was like 2006, 7, 8, around there.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
2005.
I don't fucking
somewhere, know. 2000s, mid-2000s. Yeah.
And when that came out, there was a huge frenzy to how expensive that was.
Yeah, there was a lot of backlash because $600 was not a cheap thing. But ultimately, I think one thing that Sony, this is like separate from the games aspect of the PlayStation, but Sony knew that a large number of their PS2s were actually purchased to just play movies. Like, people were just using them as DVD players because they were mm-hmm. almost cheaper than a DVD player, and you could play games on it.
That is a good point.
And the PS3 was now a Blu-ray player and could play. It was supposed to be this multimedia machine. And in a lot of respects, you could plug your iPod in and play your iPod songs from the PlayStation 3, which was kind of mm-hmm. cool. But ultimately, that's one of the things that led to PS3 doing worse compared to the Xbox 360, was that it tried to be too many things instead of like focusing on games.
Yeah, it actually, just on a side note, it eventually took out the one thing that I really liked about it back then, was that it was compatible from PlayStation 1 all the way up to PlayStation 3.
Right, it was backwards compatible for all the PlayStation games, yeah.
And they took that out to make it cheaper for people to purchase.
Right, they tried to do so many things at once, which just became too much.
Which then probably made it more worth it, because now you had the Blu-ray, which everyone wanted, and then now it has a much cheaper price.
It's much all cheaper. Right. It's more of a dumbed-down media system. Yeah, I agree.
So let's go on. So why this $60? So I should say this. I did say that games were between $40 and $80. Right. I forgot to mention that to give like an example, the games that generally were $80 at the time were like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy IV. And you'll notice that the commonality isn't just the fact that they're both made by Square Enix. It's the fact that they're RPGs. And so
you're paying for more gameplay.
Yeah. And so that's why they were more expensive, and which makes total sense. But now we get games today, like you get Persona 5.
Or Red Dead Redemption 2. Yeah, Red Dead Redemption
over 100 2 hours
is such
of
a huge game. Yeah.
And they still cost $60.
Monster Hunter World. You got all these huge games for $60. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the premise to why we want to talk about why $60. Because like there's these ridiculously huge games that cost like almost nothing to play so many hours into it. Like Rocket League.
Rocket League started off at $20, which is another.
Yeah.
And it's but, got yeah, there's
500
a,
hours from us.
There's a weird standard of $60 set that doesn't really take into account gameplay or game time or quality, really. It's just mm-hmm. everyone releases a game, or at least a full-fledged game, at $60.
Yeah. So why this? So to give you an idea, and I know Quinn will probably talk about this a little bit more, is that there was an agreement between publishers and retailers known as the minimum resale price maintenance. And so basically, it was an agreement that they could not sell below a certain price, from what I understand. And that price standing point, I believe, was $60. And so do you have anything else to add to that?
Giving a little bit more backstory on it, like I think that that agreement happened potentially even before games were $60 and when they were previously set at $50. But what happened was, the reason why 50 jumped to 60 was that there was a new licensing fee for, I believe, just the hardware aspect of games. And that licensing fee was $10. So instead of eating the cost, developers and publishers and ultimately people that own the consoles, Sony and Microsoft, pushed that fee onto consumers. So the price jumped from $50 to $60. And part of that, too, is that games have just increasingly become more and more expensive to make. So the idea to push more and more costs on the consumers was kind of unanimously accepted among the gaming industry. But like Chase said, what happened was it's illegal to actually set a price amongst all of a given product as the same, even though they're supposed to be competing with one another. So what happened was publishers and like Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo came to retailers and said, yes, we know it's illegal to set $60 for all games, but you have this window. You can sell games a little bit cheaper than $60, and you can sell games a little bit more expensive than $60, depending on your retailer. But the thing is, if you sell your game for cheaper, we're just not going to ship you the product on time. So before this discussion happened, or it wasn't even really a discussion, it was just sort of a strong arm incentive, what used to happen was you could go to mom and pop shops and they would sell you the game for a little bit cheaper than everyone else. And that was sort of how they stayed afloat. But ultimately, they got strong-armed by publishers because the publishers would notice that the games were being sold for a cheaper price. So they would say, okay, forget that mom-and-pop shop. I'm just not going to send them the game for a month. And even though they're going to try and sell it cheaper, by a month's time, that game will be worth a little bit less. So they...
Oh, man. I'm just realizing, like, I know for a fact, like, I would order a pre-sale game from my quote-unquote mom-and-pop shop. I think we used to have We had some gaming stores near us that that were essentially not like GameStop or other big companies.
Right, not larger corporations. Yeah.
And I remember, like, I'm pretty sure I pre-ordered something and I didn't get it on time, and I had to wait like another month or so to get it.
Right.
So I'm wondering if that's related to it.
It could have definitely been related. The thing is that there's no, like, what are you gonna do as a mom and pop shop? There's no law that says they have to get it to you by a certain time, and they're just going to force you to sell it at full retail price or the full $60 expected price. And if you don't, they're not going to give you the game.
God,
and if
damn,
you do,
fuck you over so
no
hard.
One's going to buy it from you because they could just buy it at Best Buy or GameStop. So it's like, you're screwed if you do and you're screwed if you don't.
Right.
And that, yeah, it's so, definitely kind of it for a while. It was very malicious, but now at this point, games are mostly purchased like digital. You can get it from Amazon, you can get it from everywhere, even Best. But like, one thing to note, too, is that now it's kind of flipped. So all these major corporations, because they're the only ones left, right, because they're the only ones selling physical copies of games, they've all almost collectively decided that they're going to drop prices of games anyway. So you'll see, like, if you do a pre-order, or if you do, like, a pre-order through Amazon Prime, you'll get $10, $15 off the game before you purchase it. And I know Amazon Prime is a whole another service you have to purchase on top of that, but I think publishers are giving these retailers a little more wiggle room to sell things for like $5 less than $60, which is,
and they're able to, because there's one big thing that's different between digital and non-digital, for example, because I'm assuming these games that you're talking about are that you buy through Amazon, as well as the other PS4, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft, all they have in common is that they're selling it digitally.
No, so I think even Best Buy will sell you a physical copy for $5 less than $60. They'll sell it for like $54.99 on
release. Do you have
to
have like a subscription or something?
I don't believe so. I think it's just the retailers, they know physical copies in some sense are worth less than digital copies to... Like, I don't know how to describe it, but from what I was reading is that
they deteriorate over time. Is
they right? It's it. They it is cost the retailer more to stock a bunch of games that might not sell, and so they sell them for cheaper. And this sort of thing happened with large games that did really poorly, like Fallout 76. Like, big retailers were cutting the price significantly because they were overstocked with these essentially garbage games. And the thing is, the publishers can't get mad because ultimately they delivered a poor product, right? So it's this weird shift that's happening, but I think it's ultimately not going to result in much because it's more based on physical copies of games.
And that sounds more like a specific basis where, like, if the game
a game by game basis.
Like,
but I do believe there is a little bit of a... nowadays, there is an incentive for retailers to do, like, a release day discount to get people to buy the games on release. And people like sales, so...
They do, which I actually want to talk about a little bit. Is that there's a lot of price variation when we talk on like Steam or Epic, the Epic Game Store, etc.
Right.
You can pick all of them. They have sales constantly, like literally.
The PC-based digital marketplaces are a shit show when it comes to sales.
Exactly. You'll see it sometimes on the PS4 and then very rarely on Nintendo, but they do happen. Like I did see a Nintendo Select last month. Where like you can get certain games that they decide to select for a little bit cheaper, but it's very rare compared to the PC where it'll just even happen abruptly.
Right, like, and even what you were mentioning earlier is that the reason why console sales very rarely happen is because each of the console digital marketplaces are owned by that company. So Nintendo owns their digital marketplace, so they don't have to put things on sale. So Sony owns their digital marketplace, so they don't have to put things on sale. Same with Microsoft.
And Nintendo is very famous for that, for not changing the
prices.
Right.
Nintendo does not reduce the price of their games. And ultimately, I've been researching this from a marketing perspective, and that's the way to do it. You never really want to put your stuff on sale because it ultimately reduces the value of your product.
You make less.
You make less, and it shows the consumer that your product is worth less if you put it on sale multiple times. And that's sort of what's happening on PC, is that there's a standard of having to sell your products for maybe full price the first day, or not even full price the first day. A lot of games that come out will have a 10% discount if you buy it within the first week or two. And then
you can get Sekiro, which was brand new, spanking back in March, and then literally a month later, it was 20% or like 10% off. It's ridiculous.
Right.
The like new games are just going for cheap, especially for the Steam Summer Sale, which probably has passed.
And I'm sure Epic and Steam are going to collide on some things, and Epic's going to have better sales on certain games, and Steam's going to have better sales on certain games. But ultimately, it's this weird marketplace where games aren't worth $60. Like, if you're playing games on PC, games are not worth $60 unless you're buying into, like, Battlefield 5 or one of these huge games. But ultimately, games aren't worth $60 on PC, and a lot of the best-selling games are free games. You know, you have Fortnite, you have League of Legends, TF2 at one point, you have CSGO's free now, like, Dota 2, all the best-selling, quote-unquote, or most downloaded games are free. It's a totally different marketplace on PC. And this is ultimately, we've had this discussion before, not necessarily on the podcast, but how this hurts indie developers a lot. Like, if you're an indie developer, you have to sell your game for $20
basically
the first time
bucks,
around. And then you have to drop it down to $10 during a sale. And after a year, your game's only worth $5.
I mean, I recently bought a game called My Time in Portia.
Right.
And I looked at it and it was like $30. Like, damn, that is too expensive for an indie game.
Right.
And really, it has a lot of content. So
Yeah, like potentially it has infinite content. It's very similar to like Stardew Valley. You could play the game for at least 100 hours and have a good time.
And it's $15, I think. Maybe 20.
Right. Now it's on sale and it's going to continue to drop in price forevermore.
Yes. And to kind of relate, let me ask you this question, Quinn. Do you think games that are priced at $60 or whatever price, really, except for the really shitty games, you can't deal with those. But in general, do you think games are really $60 or are they worth more?
Well, I think what this comes into maybe to the one of the topics we want to bring up, which is on-disc DLC and just DLC in general, and how that potentially increases the value or cost of a game to the consumer.
And yeah, that's exactly what I get into is,
right.
Yeah. Are the games worth $60? I don't think so. How do they solve it? DLC.
Right. So basically, one thing we mentioned a little bit is that games pretty much being priced at $60 is a steal for consumers, and it costs publishers a lot of, like, basically each game they put out, a large $60 game, publishers are taking a huge risk, because if their game flops, they essentially lose like $200 million worth of investment. So that's like, how do they get around this? Like Chase says, is DLC. That way they know that at least some people are going to spend even more than $60 on their game, and they can sort of pad themselves if they lose.
Right. And how do they solve it? Well, a lot of people like to play their favorite games. We have our favorite game known as Rocket League. It's not necessarily DLC, but they do add more to it in order for us to purchase more for it so that they make money. Because one of the things that, especially with online games, like if you bought Guild Wars, where you pay just one single price and then you can play it online, someone has to take care of the servers, right? So that means that you need, in order for them to make money, they need to pay extra. Or Overwatch. Overwatch, you pay one single price. You never have to pay anything again. But if you want to play, if you want, but there's servers, you play online, you have to pay more. Okay, for something. And how they solve it, they use cosmetics, they use DLC, maybe
right.
Not
the publisher pays more, or the developers pay more. Not the consumer. The consumer's never paying for the servers or whatever, because you ultimately bought that service when you paid
for
the game.
They're not, but there is a certain group of people who are paying more, but not because, and it's because of volition, but it's because there's cosmetics, there's something extra from it, they get to play more of what they love.
Right. And ultimately, this is where shady business practices come in as well, because how much are DLC worth? How much should we be encouraging people to purchase stuff in our game? And one like egregious example of this was Battlefront 2, where
story for me
where they it was only multiplayer, it was $60, and what you had to do to basically earn new content, well, I guess not earn new content, you basically had to purchase all this new content, or essentially grind for, I think that someone did the math and it was a ridiculous amount. It was like, grind for 3 years straight and you can get all the content from this game, or you could pay like $3,000 or some ridiculous thing.
Oh man, and I hated that game too, just for the fact that I paid literally full price for nothing story related, narrative related.
Right.
Like, and that's just my end. I know people play games, and I play games that don't have any story, but I just wasn't happy with the fact that I paid $60 for this game, and it felt like it had nothing.
Right. And ultimately, it's very weird how this situation worked out, but because it wasn't even, okay, you can purchase a new hero. It was you can purchase a loot box that might have a hero. And because, right, and because this of this specific malicious practice, this case has actually gone to court, and like this is becoming a really big thing, and there might be laws put in place that ban publishers and developers from putting this sort of thing into games from now on.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have a discussion about this later in another podcast episode about loot boxes, because there it's a little bit different from DLC in some ways, because it is like downloadable content, you can argue. But it's a little bit more related to the gambling industry in a lot of ways. And I think I'd love to have a discussion episode about that specifically.
Right. Or even that could probably also lead into gaming addiction.
Yeah. And freemium games. We should get into that as well. Because that is exactly why one of the reasons, or the biggest reason why loot boxes exist, I think, is you sell free games and you want to make money off of it.
Right. It's how do you make free games profitable? And ultimately, in the last 5 years, a lot of people have learned that free games are one of the most profitable. Mm-hmm. As long as you have a loot box system, or a system that allows players to gamble for good items. Now, getting back a little bit, we didn't really talk about like the extent of DLC being a really big moneymaker for publishers and developers.
So what's an example of like on disk DLC? I wanted to give some of them. So one famous example, if you just look up like some that are, you know, somewhat egregious, Animal Crossing was a famous one for the GameCube. And first of all, you needed to have like a Game Boy Advance to connect. So you needed an adapter for your Game Boy Advance. You needed to connect it to your GameCube. I think I did that for Pokemon Stadium, something like that. Not Stadium. No. Yeah, that was for the N64, though. But for when Animal Crossing was on the GameCube, they'd have these little mini games that were already on the disc that you can unlock with e-readers. And so you'd have to pay money for that. And they were already on the disc. So that was an example.
And I think there's a big difference between on-disc DLC and just DLC in general. And I think the majority of games make their money from just DLC. Like season passes, battle passes, stuff like that. That's where money is made. But I think the reason we're bringing up on-disc DLC is that essentially there is already more content made for the game, but you're being locked out. So that instead of paying $60, you're ultimately paying, let's say, like $80 for the full experience of the game.
Yeah. And I'm just going to go through one more bad example to give you an idea. A lot of the Resident Evil games do this as well, where they have something like a versus mode, or I know the infinite ammo thing was where you have to pay money for that. But I will say this, like for Resident Evil specifically, there were ways to get that content for free. It's just that like it was really fucking difficult,
right?
But it was a way to purchase it, and it was already on the disc,
right?
Okay, so that in itself is an interesting thing.
I've seen similar things to that as well, where like just game modes or game options are completely locked out unless you have money to spend.
Yeah, so it's very interesting, like how this idea came to be.
Right.
But to be a little nice about this, because I did read about how on-disc DLC is sometimes something that comes up after most of the game has been made. Mm-hmm. And so like sometimes the game is ready to be shipped soon. And so in the last couple months, people come up with, oh, we should maybe add a little bit more content for it later. And what they need to do, and this is a good example with fighting games, is sometimes they'll have new characters for you to use. So like hypothetically, I don't think this is true, but just to give like a setup example, like Tekken 7, they have DLC characters. You might want to use Noctis from Final Fantasy 15. I can't remember. I think we played the game together, Quinn, actually.
Right.
If you happen to remember any other unlockable characters. But basically, they would put the framework for the character inside of it, and then they would make it later in-house, and then you would download the rest of it. So that would be an example of on-disc DLC that's a little bit more legitimate, you could say.
And I think this is often, a lot of people find this stuff out, and this is usually how leaks happen, is people data mine a game because they know there are some unfinished assets of like a character or maybe a weapon if they're playing a shooter game. And this happens in fighting games a lot where people put, like you said, the framework or the backbone of what makes a character into the game beforehand without actually realizing what that character is going to be. Or what the finished product will look like. So it's sort of just front loading the actual disc with information so you don't have to download a couple gigs later on. And now this is also changing a lot just in today's sort of game space, because people are pushing out patches that are 2 gigs in size or 5 gigs in size. So a lot of that stuff, and I think developers are noticing that players will data mine their games, is that they're reserving putting stuff on disc or on release, even though it might not be coming out for a while.
Yeah, and to give you another example, a very recent news was that Capcom gets busted on DLC discovered for Street Fighter 10. If you actually go through the article about this one, the argument is similar to what I was talking about earlier, which is where they kind of put stuff in it to help prep it
right
once again. And so like, this is a, again, related to what Quinn was saying, like, hey, they data mine and they get the, you get these egregious like arguments, like how is this acceptable? Blah, 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 blah. And that's not, that's, it is acceptable because it makes it a lot easier to include these new characters that they want to add later.
Right, right. I think sometimes it's acceptable, sometimes it isn't. It really depends on the, what is the context of the situation. Yeah, it's a game by game basis, and it's a weird time to be playing games because there is like a lot of malicious practices going on because people are realizing that they can make a shit ton of money off of people, especially kids, which is messed up. And it's really hard to know which companies are good, like faithful, wholesome companies, especially because you're seeing a lot of the original companies that started the new console era, like BioWare, who made all the Mass Effect games, has really tanked in terms of quality and in terms of like really delivering to consumers. So you're kind of seeing this big fluctuation in the space, and you have things like Epic just turning into this massive corporation all of a sudden with Fortnite, and now being able to have a game digital marketplace that almost rivals Steam. It doesn't rival Steam in a lot of ways, but at least they'll be able to, yeah, eventually, like, they have the funding, really. They're not even funding, they have just the income from Fortnite to do whatever they want. So it's really interesting seeing things shift around and people really not unsure or being unsure of who's good out there and who's bad and who's trying to screw me over and who's not. I even saw, like, in reviews, like, looking at reviews of games that I was interested in, the one in particular was a game called Astroneer, which I actually purchased and really enjoy, and I'll probably talk about it at some point. But there were reviews of people concerned that Astroneer was using the systems that it was played on to farm cryptocurrency. And damn, it might be true, it might not be true, but the thing is that there's so many weird malicious practices happening that people are really concerned and like don't want to support things out of fear that they might be, you know, attacking consumers.
Yeah. So take some of this last few things with a grain of salt. Just realize that there is definitely malicious on this DLC. There are those that are not. And I guess just keep, be aware, maybe look as much as you can. If you want, you can always listen to us for the news. We'll try and get into it as much as possible. We'll get through your bullshit.
We have news every Monday. Check in. we'll give you as much information as we can if some of the stuff comes up again.
And you got to be careful. That's just the point.
Right. You got to be an informed consumer. That's the whole point. You should be an informed consumer on anything you buy in life. If you want to see a movie, be sure that it's, you know, not Superman v. Batman. You know, just make sure it's a good movie. I don't know.
That's just two separate movies right there. It had Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman.
Stay away from the DC stuff for now. I mean, Aquaman was interesting, a lot of cool graphics, but I don't know if it was a good movie, you know?
I saw the movie recently, and it was really good all the way up until the end. Because
I don't even remember it, to be honest. I just remember water. There was so much water on screen.
You're such a hydro homie.
I'm a hydro homie. Represent. But ultimately, I think what this brings us to is the main question. You know, we got to the why games are $59.99 or why games are $60, but what do games cost nowadays?
I think games nowadays cost far more than $60 per thing, but
and far less.
Yes, because when you go through digital, you don't have to pay through transportation anymore.
I think also just the fact that there are free games, like free, really high quality games.
I mean, like, when someone sells the game for $60, is it really $60? The answer is no.
Right, but that's not the question I'm asking. I'm just asking, what does it cost Joe Schmo to get a game nowadays?
Much cheaper than it did 20 years ago. Is the biggest thing.
Right. I think arguably there isn't an answer. Joe Schmo has options. Joe Schmo can buy like the NES $40 game or an $80 game. There's plenty of different games to buy, different platforms to buy on. There are free games. There are, like you said, freemium games. There's games
that can cost... Collector's Edition, which go up to $300. Final Fantasy VII's, and this is just for the first game.
You're such a Final Fantasy freak. I know. My God.
Just FYI, Final Fantasy VII Remake, that's going to come out in multiple parts. The first part is worth $400.
The collector's edition.
Yeah, and that's the... It comes with, like, a statue and shit, but my point is that it's ridiculously expensive for just part one, and that is how they do it, is they start selling other things that are worth more in order to beat those costs.
Right, I think that's one way to do it, but you have games like Battlefield 5, where the reason they can, like, still pump stuff out and get a ton of money is because they have season passes and new updates that people have to pay for.
Right.
And ultimately, those games end up costing an arm and a leg. Not an arm and a leg, but they cost almost... You can get up there in price, especially stuff like Destiny. Oh my god, don't let me get started on Destiny. That cancer of a whole series, but like...
Yeah, there was a whole debate on how they had the DLC that came out with it. I can't remember if it was Destiny 1 or 2. And then it actually locked original things that were on the base game.
Or how, like, Destiny came out, and Destiny 2, they did the exact same thing, where the game came out, $60, right?
Yeah.
The game dropped in price because it was just not, you know, doing as well. And then their first, like, major update, what they would do was they axed all the original copies off the shelf and released a new $60 version of the game. So you had Destiny Taken King, I believe, and now it was $60 to buy in. Destiny 2 did something very similar. Yeah, you could not buy just
the DLC necessarily.
Right, you couldn't just upgrade your existing copy unless you did it from the get-go, which is just utter... Oh my god, it makes me hate the game.
I bought Destiny Taken King.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
And ultimately, too, people just like... People understood, like, okay, Destiny is screwing us over. Also, Destiny wasn't a complete game. And then they had to update the game to make it complete. And ultimately, you're paying $180 for a complete game. Hey, Jesus.
Quinn, do you know what other game had that issue and did the same exact thing?
What?
Final Fantasy 15.
Oh, my God. Do I mean 14?
Sorry. No, 15 had the same issue. The original game got a fuck ton of updates because it wasn't complete.
Right.
The DLC, for example, like, I'll give you a very exact example. You would play through the game. One of your friends got injured, and it wouldn't tell you why your friend got injured. He just says he did. And then they later came out with a DLC about it. And then...
did you have to purchase this DLC?
You get it with the pass, season pass.
Oh my
God. Or you pay for it $5.
So you needed a season pass to fix an issue within the game.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's an even better one. Because this one, you'd be like, what the fuck? So one of your characters, one of your friends goes blind.
Randomly?
And they did not talk about it.
Okay.
Like they say a week. So basically your character Noctis, he wakes up, he's been out for a week because he had this big battle, and then his friend is blind now, and he's like, I can't see anymore and blah blah blah, and he doesn't talk about why. And then later they come out with a DLC about it. Actually, did they come out with it? Fuck, because I know they act. Funny thing is, because they weren't making money off of the DLCs, they axed some episodes out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know if any of that information is true, but
it is true. No.
Well, the blind stuff.
The blind stuff is true. They axed out some of it because they were not making money. They lost $33 million during that fiscal year.
Wow.
If I recall. And so they decide to axe it to save money on trying to continue making the DLC.
So basically they're like, yeah, we're not going to explain why he's blind.
I don't remember if it was specifically the blind one, but I know like there was supposed to be like 4 or 5 episodes where there was these major characters that came into it and they never really did any explanations as to why they exist. Mm-hmm. And the last one they came out with was called Episode Arden, which was the main antagonist of the game. That was the last one to come out, and they didn't do like Luna Freya. And I know I'm getting really geeky here, but basically Luna Freya was the woman in the white who was like your Oracle buddy. And they never did any information about her. They just said she existed in the game. And then they axed that episode because they weren't making enough money. But anyways, sorry, let me get back to the actual point. Is that you get these bullshit DLCs that because they didn't complete the game, as in Destiny did.
And right, so and it just like cash grab. It's a cash grab to like, hey, you're invested in our game. Do you want more information? Here, spend some money.
Yeah, and the game is great, by the way. But it is egregious that you have to.
Man, the word of the week, word of the day, egregious.
It is fucked up.
Yeah, it is bullshit. Yeah, but right, I think the ultimate conclusion: games cost $60 at some point. It was set because we had consoles like PS3 and Xbox 360 where consumers got, you know, in their head, it became stuck that games are worth $60. But now in a more digital connected age, things are changing. The ecosystem is moving around. Games, do they cost $60 anymore? I think it's really up to you and how you want to purchase your games nowadays.
Yeah, and it'll be fun to see how the import tariffs... the import taxes in China, where most things are made.
Also, I mean, for a future discussion, I think this also brings up the question of subscription-based gaming and things like even Stadia and how that will work. And Xbox, they're doing a new thing where you get a special pass that has Xbox Gold and all these Xbox
for
games.
For $1 for 1 year. Right. Or maybe it's a month. But the point is
yeah, I think it's actually $15.99 or $14.99 or something a month.
It's $14.99 normally.
Right.
Per month.
So yeah, there's like a lot more to discuss in terms of that. But I think for now, the main discussion was, you know, on $60 games and do they cost that much now? And I think we went over that pretty successfully. Yeah.
Bullshit prediction here, guys. I think games are going to cost $70 from now on when the PS5 comes out.
And also another bullshit prediction. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, yep. You hear that?
Let the more bullshitty person win.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Yeah. Hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. If you want to share your opinions or just talk to us about how stupid we are, please do on Twitter at BS Games Podcast.
I would also appreciate if you left a review. It really helps with our podcast to keep growing, you know, and especially when you send out these tweets or these reviews, you know, you can be a little bit of an asshole about it if you need to. I don't care.
Right. Just make sure you leave us a 5-star review. We will be your therapist, your video game therapist. That's what our podcast should have been called. But yeah, like Chase said, we're a small podcast. We literally just started. So any review, any tweet to us really helps us out. It not only helps the podcast itself, but it helps us, like personally helps us understand, like, okay, there's people out there. We want to build a little bit of a community. We want to have people to talk about these discussions with. We've been talking to each other for umpteen years, and I think we need...
I don't want to be alone with him.
Yeah, we need new perspectives in our little gamer circle here. It's not even our gamer line, you know? We need to make it a triangle and then maybe a square, and then eventually, if we get enough people, we can have a little gamer discussion circle. But once again, thank you guys for listening.
See you guys later. Red,